Welcome to Vision and Voices, a podcast where ordinary people are doing extraordinary work in your community. I'm your host, Crystal Baker Gill. As long as there have been people who care about fighting for change in this world, there have also been individuals advocating for sexual assault prevention. According to NSVRC, which is the National Sexual Violence Research Center, in the United States, movements for social change and equality began to gain traction in around the 1940s, 1950s with the Civil Rights era. Efforts during that time were championed by Black women and women of color. Survivors and advocates mobilized and they called for legislation promoting sexual assault prevention. One result of that effort was the 1993 Violence Against Women's Act, the National Sexual Assault Awareness Week, which eventually became National Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which is acknowledged this month in April. Data shows nearly 1 in 5 women and 1 in 71 men in the United States have been raped at some time in their lives. More than half of the female victims of rape reported being raped by an intimate partner, 40.8% by an acquaintance. And for male victims, more than half, 52.4%, reported being raped by an acquaintance and 15% by a stranger. Most female victims of rape experienced their first rape before the age of 25. The majority of male victims, 79%, experienced their first rape before the age of 25. And more than 1/4 of male victims, 27.8%, experienced their first rape when they were 10 years of age or younger. These statistics are staggering and extremely hard to digest, but imagine living this experience on a daily basis. My guest today is the Honorable Valerie Nicholas, the first and only African-American woman to serve on the Laurel City Council since 2011. In 2019, she became the first African-American woman to hold the council at large position. And in 2020 was nominated and is now the very first African-American woman to serve as the City of Council president. Valerie also serves as the founder and CEO of Love Is Not Enough Incorporated, a nonprofit that was born of her own personal experiences of domestic violence. Valerie says that the work she does through her organization is her way of turning her pain into purpose and honoring the grace she received from God. Good morning, Valerie, and welcome to Vision and Voices.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining me today. This is a tough topic that we're getting into, but it's one that is definitely necessary and one that I hope our listeners will be able to get some insight from. Can you share with us a little about your organization, Love Is Not Enough?
Be happy to. Love Is Not Enough was birthed out of my own trauma. I am a survivor of domestic violence. I went through abuse for 25 years. In 1995, I was 7 months pregnant, and in my 7th month, he beat me up, and my baby's heart stopped, so she passed away. Through my relationship with this gentleman, I used to always say that love is just not enough to stay in this abusive relationship. And after healing, being healed, you know, getting healed, my recovery through having the baby and just going through severe depression, a very deep, deep, dark place I was at, you know, I just asked the Lord to please let me get myself together so I can be able to help other people. And the Love Is Not Enough stayed in my head for many, many years. Mm-hmm. So I named it Love Is Not Enough Incorporated because love is just not enough to go through that type of trauma.
Absolutely. That makes sense. I was wondering where the name emerged from because it's a powerful name. It's something that, you know, people and many people need to kind of look at that concept because that sometimes can be a reason why people stay in situations.
That's the main reason, you know, and out of in fear too. But, you know, as I am helping other people going through abuse and just looking at my own past, I used to always say, oh, I love him and he's going to do better. And, you know, and it never worked that way.
So this type of work, this is not an easy job. This is not the easy type of work. And I saw that you've been coined as the wounded healer. Tell me about that term and what that means to you.
Well, it is a book called The Wounded Healer. by Andre Nguyen. And I was speaking at a church many, many years ago. And there was a gentleman who heard me speaking in the audience. He was representing another church. This had to be 10, 15 years ago. He said, "You are the wounded healer." And he said, "Go get the book." He said, "I'm not going to tell you what it means. You go get the book and you read it." I was on the hunt for that book and I got it. And what it means is that while you're tending to your own wounds, you're helping another person heal as well. Awesome. So I thought that title fits me well, I believe.
That's beautiful. Can you share a little bit about your story and, you know, what compelled you to jump in and start helping others?
Well, as I said, for 25 years, I went through abuse. In the home, I grew up in Roanoke, Virginia, and my mom died in front of me when I was 8. And my dad was an alcoholic, and a lot of his alcoholic friends would come around and they started abusing me. I was a bartender by the time I was 11 years old. Wow. That's why I don't drink. But I was a bartender by the time I was 11. And then as I grew older, I got into an abusive relationship by the time I was 15, 16, 17. I was being abused in the home and also being abused outside of the home. I didn't know what love looked like. I never saw what love looked like. No one ever explained to me that, you know, domestic violence, sat down and say, this is what it means and this is not good. I didn't know that until I became an adult. So all up through my adult life, I went from all up through my teenage to my adult life, I went through abusive relationships. I used to go to a makeup artist. When I moved here in Washington, I was running from abuse. The last thing that happened to me, when I was in Roanoke was I was in a relationship with a gentleman and he pretty much beat me up and I was able to get here to Washington. I had $4.73. I came on a bus and it was something. It really was something. I still held on to that one shoe because I had one shoe on and I had one bag of clothes. I had $4.73 and that was in 1986. And it really was something else for me. I don't even know what to say or how to say what happened to me. It just was tragic. As I went through my adult life, it really became even worse. I went through abuse. And it was terrible. I don't even know what to say. But anyway, I decided when I got myself together after my baby died, I decided that I was going to help other people when I was going through the depression. And that's what I did. I said, once I get myself together, I will start an organization and I will continue to serve until I take my last breath on earth. And that's what I've been doing, one person at a time.
That's awesome. That's an awesome story. How were you able to kind of turn your life around? How were you able to change things for yourself? I know that wasn't an easy task.
It wasn't an easy task, but my faith in God is very important to me. It is only by God's grace that I'm still here because I went through a depression that nearly took me out. I tried to commit suicide a number of times. And I remember saying it was on a Sunday. I went to church and that afternoon is when I had planned that I was going to take my life. And I remember sitting at my dining room table in my new home and I said, this is it. And I remember having dinner with an angel. Because everything was running through my mind about, you know, why are you going to do this? And it was almost like a rationale that I was going through. And from that day of deciding that I wasn't going to do that, I just started helping other people. I knew then that all of my experiences and all of my pain would be a blessing for someone else to hear that someone not only went through it, but they survived. You know, I want to give people hope, you know, to let them know that no matter what they go through, they can make it.
That's pretty awesome. So, and I understand that you are also a minister now. Share with me a little bit about how your ministry helps you to connect with those individuals as well.
I actually served as a hospital chaplain for a number of years at one of the hospitals in Maryland. I'm not currently a chaplain in the hospital I currently work in, but the chaplaincy and the ministry will go with me for the rest of my life. I noticed that even when I'm in the hospital and out of the hospital, as I'm talking to people, God is always the first thing that I bring up because I know that it's only by His grace that I'm still here.
Awesome. That's awesome. One other question I want to ask you about Love is Not Enough. If a person is interested in working with you, what are some of the things, or how would they reach you? How do they get in touch with Love is Not Enough, your organization?
It's loveisnotenough.org. I'm happy to air my phone number and my email address right here, but they can reach me. Most people reach me through word of mouth, by email, or by telephone. But I do have a website, and I'm happy. Is it okay for me to share my email address now?
Absolutely.
It's Roanoke, Virginia. It's Roanoke, VA for Virginia, the number 20 at gmail.com. Most people send emails. And then my cell number, which is my personal cell, is 301-573-6183. I prefer a text or an email, because during the day at the hospital, or if I'm out serving, I don't carry my phone. It's in the car, because I can't keep up with all of that, because I'm actually working by myself. But I take all calls. I just, you know, the personal touch that I add, that I think sanctifies me from other organizations and other people that are doing the same thing, is I make myself available. You don't have to go through a team of people to reach me. You don't have to do this, you know, heavy screening and all that. I'm up close and personal with the people that I serve. And most of the clients that I've helped and that I'm helping in the community will tell you that. I mean, I've been up, as I told you earlier, I've been up all night with family, and I literally have not been to bed. I got home this morning, took a shower, and headed here to work. But that's just what I do. That's just how it is and what I do. And I enjoy what I do. That makes the difference. I love helping people, and I love serving.
How often does that happen for you, that you receive those calls in the middle of the night with the work that you do? I can imagine that that's something that happens often.
It's very common. I have 3 cell phones, and they all ring at the same time, between cell phone, email, text. You know, someone is always in need, and I love it. I don't get tired. I don't say, oh, what do they want? Or I don't feel like being bothered. There is never a vacation. There's never a turnoff. And this is just part of my commitment and what God fulfilled for me, part of my prayer request of asking him to, number one, expand my territory, and to also let me be able to serve, give me the wisdom and the energy to be able to serve and help people.
That's an awesome testimony. So kind of shifting a little bit, we are in the middle of a pandemic, hopefully on the downward spiral of this pandemic. In your experience with some of the individuals that you've supported and that you've helped, do you see a rise in those individuals who, you know, may be assaulted or abused during this time because of, you know, being sheltered in place, because we're not able to get out as much?
Well, what I've seen on television and what I've researched for myself, I've seen that the percentage, the statistics have gone up for domestic violence victims, because people are in pandemics, you're at home. There's an outlet for victims that are living with their spouse. They can go out, you know, some of them, they go to work. Now everything being working from home and things being closed and you can't get out, there is a rise. Definitely there is a rise.
Is that something that you see in your work with the clients that you serve at all?
Yes, absolutely. I have a lot of the clients that are living in the hotels. There are some living in the tent villages, but a lot of them are living in the hotels. And, you know, it's just really, you have to see it to believe it. Some of the things I've seen and the things I've experienced are unthinkable. You wouldn't believe it unless you were there to actually witness it.
I'm sure that can be a really challenging situation. If someone were to, you know, come to you to share their, you know, looking for support from your organization, you know, what things would you share with them? What are some of the resources that are available for someone?
Oh, the first thing I do is, you know, I let them know that I'm not judging them, because a lot of what I found, you know, when I was going through my abuse, and as I talk to other victims, is they're ashamed, they're embarrassed, because they don't, you know, they feel like they're being judged by sharing their story. So I say to people, if you know someone or a loved one or a friend from afar or close, don't be judgmental, because you never know what that person is going through. Be open. Be open to them, listen to what they have to say, and be open to help them. I would also tell them there are resources out here. I've given out the National Domestic Violence Hotline. That number is 800-799-SAFE. The SAFE is 7233. So the number is 800-799-7233. And they can use that number. But I also have resources available, you know, just to help them and direct them in the safe place, because the number one priority is keeping them safe. I also talk to people about having a safety plan, because for years I didn't have one. But when I finally decided to leave, I had a safety plan in place. So your next question is going to be, what is a safety plan? A safety plan is pretty much a collection of personal items that you may need. If you have children, having their insurance card, their medications, whatever they will need for their daily living secured. For myself, I was single, so I always made sure I had cash, my medication because I have high blood pressure, some snacks, water, contact lists, my phone book or duplicate things so I can have in place if I need to run. And I also had a safety person that I could call. Again, for people that have friends or family, loved ones, or know someone that is going through abuse, do not judge them. Help them, embrace them, because your judgment may cost them their life, because they feel like if they come and talk to somebody and say, oh, you this, you that, it makes it, it pushes them closer and closer to that abuser. So I say, do not judge. Do not judge. Help them get to a safe place. So those are the things that I would say. The other thing I wanted to say is I'd like to describe to people what domestic violence is. Domestic violence has five stages. It is verbal, emotional, sexual, financial, and physical. And for me, my abuse started verbally and emotionally, and then it escalated to the physical part, because what that abuser is trying to do is break down that self-esteem. That's what they're trying to do. If they can break you, then you're stuck. You know, you have to, it will take a very strong will and a very strong desire to say, this is not what I deserve, because they will make you think you're ugly, you're fat, nobody wants you, your family don't care about you, because what they want to do is isolate you from your support system. That's what they do. They isolate you and then they can control you.
So you mentioned family, and one of the questions I was going to ask is, you know, why is it that so many people don't go to family members when they're in those abusive situations? What is like the psyche behind that? I know you mentioned sometimes the, you know, the judgment, but, you know, what are some of those reasons?
Well, you know, for me, I did not go to my family because I felt embarrassed. You know, my family, my parents are deceased. My family, I view them as being very successful. And I was embarrassed. I felt like that I had not, this is just speaking for myself. I felt that I just had not, was not on their level. I was ashamed that I was not further in life that I could have been. That was that for me. What I have seen with other people that I am helping, they say things like, well, my mom or my dad or my sister, they didn't like this person anyway. So if I go to them, they're going to say, I told you so, make me feel even worse, make me feel guilt. And I don't want to hear that. And that's the deterrent for them coming to help. That's why I emphasize and say, embrace them with love. Let them know, safe people, safe place. No matter how you feel on the inside, because what you say can cost them their life. You know, they'll go back to that abuser. Eventually, abuse does not stop. The end to abuse to me is death. Had I have stayed in that relationship, I would have been dead, because his intentions were to take me out. And I knew that. I could see it in his eyes. I could see it in his face. You know, I knew him well. The least little triggers, anything, if you know, he'd have a bad day, but it would be my fault. If it's raining outside, that would be my fault. If we were out of bread or out of burgers or something, everything would be my fault. So I knew those triggers for that. So those are just the things that I would say, you know, as I look back over my life, all of the years that have gone by and all of the things that I've learned, I just want to pour and empower into other people and to embrace them and let them know that they can make it. You know, my tagline that I say to people, and it's on my website, is leaving people better than I found them. You know, my goal is not, you know, I feed the homeless every day. I give hygiene bags and provide resources. My goal is to help you become self-sufficient. That's my goal. My goal is not to bring you a sandwich every day or, you know, give you a hygiene bag every day. My thing is to empower you to get your strength up so you can succeed and make it and become the next Valerie Nicholas, who's helping people, who's pushing people along the way. Those are my goals. Or to fulfill your own dreams of going to college, being a homeowner, being a business owner. I just want to empower people. That's my purpose.
We're also in April is Volunteer Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. So what are some ways that, you know, other individuals, whether it be with your nonprofit or, you know, working with just if they notice that these are things that are going on, how could they be a support? How could they step in and help some of these other nonprofits volunteer their time, their services to support these efforts?
Okay, well, you know, I'm always open for volunteers so they can contact me. What I would also like to say is they can reach out to the organizations they're interested in. If they're interested, they see another nonprofit organization they're interested in, call them up. Say, you know, I'd like to volunteer and donate my time. You know, just a phone call away or go on the internet. They may have it by way you fill out a questionnaire or fill out an application online. But look for the agencies, look for the organizations that you like what they're doing, you believe in their mission, and reach out to them.
Valerie, my last question to you is, we've talked about different ways that individuals can, you know, come out to volunteer. We've talked about different things that we can do to help and support some as family members, those individuals who may be experiencing abuse and trauma. But if you can speak to those individuals, those persons who may be, you know, not sure as to whether they want to leave or not sure of what they should do. If you can speak to them from your personal experience and just kind of give them a word of advice.
My word to those people that are listening is love is not supposed to hurt. Love is not supposed to hurt. And when it does, you're in the wrong place. Love yourself enough to know that there's a better life for you. If you need to call me, I don't care what time it is, what hour, what day, call me. If you need to call the domestic violence hotline, call them. Talk to somebody. Don't give up on your life. Don't give up on your dreams. You can make it. I had to constantly tell myself that because I was in some very dark stages in my life. So, you know, I want to embrace, I want to encourage, never give up. Winston Churchill said, never, ever, ever give up. Never give up on your life. Never give up on your dreams. You can make it. Stay positive. Stay focused. Get out of that abuse. Love is not supposed to hurt. And when it does, you're in the wrong place.
And one last time, your contact information.
My email, my personal email is Roanoke, Virginia, the number 20 at gmail.com. That's Roanokeva, the number 20 at gmail.com. And my personal cell number is 301-573-6183. And I thank you so much for having me.
Thank you again. And I really appreciate having you here with us. Again, this was Vision and Voices, a podcast where ordinary people are doing extraordinary work in your community. I really appreciate Valerie for sharing her story, providing her time and her insight on the topic of sexual assault awareness and abuse. Again, I also want to acknowledge that this month is National Volunteer Month. For those of you who do not have a nonprofit that you support, please get involved, share your talent. Help us to transform the world. This has been Vision and Voices, a podcast where ordinary people are doing extraordinary work in this community. I'm your host, Crystal Baker Gill. Learn more about Volunteers of America Chesapeake and Carolinas and what we do at voachesapeake.org and hear this podcast and others like it on Dragon Digital Radio at podbean.podbean.com.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.